It's the JT the Brick Show.
You know, we're going to have a lot of positive energy. The guys that love to compete and play with passion are going to have a chance at our place.
Your silver and black home to sound off for over 25 years.
Man, I'm loving it, man. They're making my job tremendously easy to be out here with these young, talented players, man. I think we have a really good team.
I'm super excited. I'm already loving this fan base, so I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Out of the gate, JT, as we are live from Raiders headquarters. A nice audible today. Wasn't planning on being here. I showed up and they said, can you do the show here today? Because we got everybody in the building. All of our talent are here. Tonight is our Academy Awards dinner for all the people that work for the Raiders on the media side. So we're really excited about that. So Rich Gannon's here. Matt Millen's here. Amber Theo Harris is here. Baron Davis, I got a cool story to tell you. He's here. Kirk Morrison, the great Lincoln Kennedy. They're all in the house tonight. We got a big dinner we're going out to tonight to get loose and have a good time. And then it's alumni weekend as the alumni are here. Just came off the field for Raiders practice against the 49ers. I'll let our guests talk about it. The same old thing. Thought it was good. I saw some big takeaways that I'm going to get into. Some other things that you might want to talk about if you were here at practice. I got something new I want to talk about here, and I'm excited to put it in the monologue. Brought to you by PTs. They fuel the monologue 5 to 7, midnight to 2. You know the program, the best happy hour in town, as we kick off from headquarters, partnered up with Golden Entertainment. Trey Tucker and the deep ball. That's my takeaway today in the monologue. They've been taking shots. And Trey Tucker got a couple of big bomb touchdown receptions again today. I've seen him do it in practice against his teammates. Okay, that's pretty cool. To do it against the 49ers, fantastic. Trey Tucker, to me, is an MVP of the 2025 Las Vegas Raiders training camp. I told you, Aiden looked unbelievable when the camp started. Unbelievable. Forget about the game. I'm talking about practice, right? Max is Max. Take Max out. Max today, I wish Trent Williams played more. The future Hall of Famer, tackle, but he wasn't involved with a lot of the drills there. But they were chirping at each other. But, you know, George Kittle caught a couple of big passes. The Niners caught a couple of touchdowns. But I'll tell you this much. Trey Tucker now, there is no excuse for him not having multiple deep ball touchdowns this year. All they got to do is hold the line of scrimmage and throw bombs to him. Not all the time, but a couple of times in a game. And he will catch the ball over the defenders. And if you throw it in the red zone, he'll go get it. That's what I'm really excited to talk about today. Trey Tucker, I believe, has had one of the best camps, period, because he is explosive every time I look at him. I was with a bunch of people on the sidelines as he got loose a couple of times deep. The ball comes out beautiful from Geno. And look, we've had Jack Besh one yesterday, right? He had a great practice yesterday. Dante Thornton has had some good practices. Alex Bachman has played well. You know, the receivers have been playing, I think, pretty good in camp. Last year in Costa Mesa, it was an epic disaster. Every ball got batted down at the line of scrimmage, or the quarterbacks didn't play well. Not the case with Geno. Geno is letting it fly to Trey Tucker. So we'll see what happens. You know, the game's going to be different. When it's real, it's going to be different. I also want to share a couple of conversations I had today. After practice, I went out on the field, and he was by himself, Jackson Powers Johnson. I walked right up to him and said, Raider Nation has your back. And he said, I appreciate it. I said, I've been doing this a long time. A lot of people are talking about you, and a lot of fans have your back. And he said, thanks, JT. Appreciate that. That was it. Are you going to play more? What do you think? He was great. After practice, I just wanted to reach out to him and tell him that. My most important conversation today, other than with the owner, who was able to say hi to for a little bit, was John Lynch, who is the general manager of the 49ers. Quick story. When I got married over 25 years ago, I swam up to a pool bar in Hawaii, like a movie. You know, it's unbelievable. Palm trees everywhere, pool bar. And I'm swimming up to the pool bar. Yes, I was the captain of my swim team. And as I swam up to the pool bar to order a cocktail, John Lynch was swimming up to the pool bar. He was married the same day as me and had the honeymoon. He was on his honeymoon. I was on my honeymoon. Whenever we see each other, we bring that up. And I told John Lynch, it was in the Raiders weight room. I said, John, I just want to congratulate you on all your success. And I said, I just can't believe the level of players you continue to bring in on defense and how they run downhill. And he said, thanks, man. He goes, you know, we look for a certain style of player. And that's the type of player we want. So I'm a big fan of John Lynch. I am. He's a really good guy. And I go back with him, you know, quarter century. So it's nice to talk to him for a little bit. And it was interesting. It's always weird being in this building with another team. So the Niners are walking around and the Niners are in the weight room. And there were no fights. There was a little couple of pushing and shovings after plays, but no fights. Everything seemed to be pretty good. Kyle Shanahan got his team down here, even though they're banged up, and a lot of guys weren't able to play. I talked to Vic Tafer for a bit. He's covering the Niners here. He covered the Raiders for a long time. It was nice to catch up with him. And then Baron Davis shows up, and he comes up to me, and he's like, JT. And we go back to Oakland. He remembers me from his days playing for the Oakland Warriors, 1-888-GSW-HOOP. And we had a nice conversation. I'm going to be seeing him tonight at dinner as he's going to be hosting Talk of the Nation. I think we're going to have him here today. So if you want to watch the show, we're live on YouTube at JT The Brick, my own channel, JT The Brick YT. You can subscribe for free and you can see some of our guests here. And I think we have the nicest broadcast radio podcast studio in all of sports. And you're not going to see it unless you watch and click on the camera and see what we're doing here. Oh, one more other thing, too, when it comes to, you know, people who are around, Jason Horowitz, Lincoln Kennedy, Eric Allen, who's doing the broadcast today. I hope you watched the YouTube stream with Amber, Theo Harris. They did a nice job today, too. But on a serious note, the highlight of my day was my wife and my two sons came to practice. And it's the first practice and probably the last one they'll come to this year. And we got a photo of them, and we've been taking photos at training camp since my sons were born, before my youngest son was born. So we were able to do that today, and that meant a lot to me because we'll put that up in our collage at home of all the camps that we had. And, you know, my sons were looking around and watching practice and talking to Eric Allen and Lincoln Kennedy, gave him a big hug, and that's really important to me. The Raiders have treated me like a family for a long time, and I really feel it on days like today. And today was very special to be out here at camp. It's hot. Yeah, it's hot. Mark Davis built a whole bunch of shade and canopies for everybody. Plenty of water, Gatorade. It's all there. Food trucks. Haven't tried the food trucks, but there are a lot of food trucks out there. And to me, this isn't the end, but it's close to the end. This today was the last practice that you're going to see against another team, the first and last. I think both teams looked okay. I talked to Matt Maiocco, who is a great writer and insider for the 49ers, and we went through the depth chart. A lot of those guys are hurt. Niners got an easy schedule. They're going to need it. I think the Niners right out of the gate play Seattle, if I'm right. Niners are going to have some guys on the field week one, and they're going to be kind of a mash unit. Guys that are going to be able to play, but they're banged up. I saw the Pro Bowler Kyle Juszczyk catch a touchdown getting behind the Raiders deep part of the field, which was a little bit concerning. Caillou Kelly is playing well. Darian Porter out there. Jermaine Pratt. I saw Kittle go up against Pratt, and Pratt knocked the ball or grabbed the ball. It wasn't an interception, but he stopped Kittle. They're not tackling to the ground, but they were rapping today, which was good. And, you know, my conversation with Rich Gannon, I talked to Rich on the field, mostly private, about what he thinks, so I'm not going to put words in Rich's mouth. But one of the things that I brought up to him, and he agreed with me, is the Raiders got to get going here with the line of scrimmage at the point of attack. It's a really important thing I'm about to say. The Raider offensive line has got to move people. They've got to move people. They've got to jump off the snap, not jump off sides, put their hands on people and move them backwards so Ashton Jeanty can hit a hole. In 11-on-11, Ashton Jeanty had a 20-yard run. I think it probably would have been a 25-yard run before he went out of bounds. But what we want to see with Ashton is we want to see Ashton be able to hit the line of scrimmage with a hole, not be stopped at the line of scrimmage and have to break outside like Barry Sanders because the holes aren't open. You get what I'm saying on that? It's very important what I'm telling you. Because who was I with? Jason Horowitz or Mike Taylor, veteran of the Raiders and media. We're going to see how good this offensive line is week one. We're not going to see it before that. We're really not going to see a lot against the 49ers and Arizona. So do you believe, and that's the call for today, if you want to call in, 702-365-9200. Do you believe that this team can run block? I think their pass protection is going to be fine. Everything I see in regards to pass protection and Geno and what they're doing with their scheme looks pretty good to me. A lot of guys have been open, catching the ball, and moving the ball downfield. I'm not concerned yet about pass blocking. I'm a little bit concerned about the run blocking because I can't tell if they're going to be good at it or not. This is not Art Shell and Gene Upshaw. This is not Jim Otto and Dave Dalby. Okay? This isn't Lincoln Kennedy, Barrett Robbins, and Frank Middleton. It's not. And in order for them to play well, I'm a big believer of run behind Colt Miller. Colt Miller is our best offensive lineman. He just got a huge contract extension. Run behind Colt Miller and Dylan Parham. Dylan Parham's a nasty dude. He is. Dylan Parham can be a bad man. But Jordan Meredith and Jackson Powers Johnson, I'm not sure about that yet, and nor are you. And I don't think Pete Carroll is sure about it yet, but I think he's encouraged by the play of those guys. All right, enough of me. We got Pete Carroll. I always say when the coach speaks, it's more important than me. So we have a bunch of interviews from today, a bunch of live interviews here in studio. Let's begin the show with the head coach of the Silver and Black right after practice, what he said at the podium.
What do you think? Did you get out of today what you were hoping?
Oh, exactly what I was thinking. Heck, I don't have any idea right now. I'm watching offense. I'm watching defense. I got to see the film. I know everybody worked hard. It was great to get against these guys. They're skilled, and they do a lot of cool things scheme-wise. The taxes and help us learn. And so it was a totally positive experience. I thought Kyle did a great job of managing their team, and we tried to do the same so that we didn't get issues and all that. We avoided all that kind of stuff. So it's just really classy work to get, and we'll make evaluations and figure that out once we get a chance to go watch the film as soon as I leave here. He felt like he had hit in the head a little bit. They didn't think it was serious, but they needed to just make sure.
Pete, the fact that you don't skirmishes speak of, is that something you addressed prior to this morning? You didn't want your guys getting bothered in the afternoon?
Yes, that's exactly what we both sides. I know Kyle did the same thing. Want to make sure that that's not part of what we're doing. It's not part of what we come here to do. We come here to play good football and get better. And I think both sides did a great job of showing that.
Coach, what did you think of the offensive line against those guys?
I can't tell you. I haven't seen enough. I mean, I was running back and forth. I can't tell you. I have no evaluation until I see the film.
What are you hoping to see when you get a chance to take a deep breath?
Really good stuff. I mean, we're blowing them off the football, and they can't make an inch. That didn't quite happen. I know that. But I want to see us execute. We try to treat this just like it's the next opportunity that we have and do stuff right, and that was what we set out to do. We'll find out. You know, I thought on defense the perimeter looked kind of available to them. They do that. They're a great perimeter team. We've not prepared for them at all. You know, we got a day to get a little bit better before the ball game.
This is a team that's always well coached. And how good of a challenge is that for you to see a team kind of blindly and be able to react to them?
You know, Robert Saleh and Gus Bradley's over there, and Kyle has done a great job for years and years. They've got a terrific group, and that's only what we would expect from them. You know, they know what they're doing. They have control of their groups. They have style of play that always shows up. So that means they've got a real philosophy in mind and all that. So that's why this is such quality work for us.
You coach so many great wide receivers, but Jacoby just makes plays every day. He's not a prima donna. Would you talk about how fortunate this team is to have a Jacoby type?
Yeah, he's so sure-handed, so steady, so improvisational that he can get himself open. With he and Brock, it's tough to cover those two guys. And so they complement each other in a great manner. But Jacoby's done a fantastic job. Every day we're coming out here, he's making plays.
How much play you start Saturday? You only have three opportunities in the preseason.
Everybody's live.
Caillou Blue Kelly has been making a move, I guess, on the...
I'm glad you noticed it, because I'm noticing it, too. He's had plays every day for about the last 5 or 6 days out here, you know. Mock game, too. He's just been really active. Seems like he's really settling in. And his aggressive style of play has really shown up. So I'm fired up for him. If you notice, I don't know if it happened today, but yesterday he got work with the ones, and you know, just to see how he fits in and all of that. Just a great example of a guy competing his butt off and trying to make a, you know, a statement.
And in his case, he's somebody that kind of started on the third team, and all of a sudden now he's up with the ones. That's sort of what you're. If you show us what we need to see,
you're either competing or you're not. You know, that's what he's doing. He has embraced the thought, and he's battled every day, and he's shown that he deserves more of an opportunity. And so that's all we could ever ask for from our guys.
How much of this practice today, what did you get as a main takeaway from it that you want to carry over into Saturday?
I got to see the film. Okay, I really don't know. But I would say that we want to make sure that things that we didn't do well today, we like to do them well on game day.
Coach, this is kind of a silly question, but San Francisco related. I read in an old article that you once saw Grateful Dead at the Fillmore. Is that true, or have you ever gone to a Grateful Dead concert?
Probably 20 times, yeah.
What do you remember?
They were the second and third or third and fourth bands back in the day. At Avalon Ballroom in Winterland and Fillmore. So we saw them a ton of times.
Yeah, I know Hosmer still kind of gets you better a little bit. You've seen him practice a couple times and play in a game. What have you been your thoughts about him now that you've seen him a little bit more?
He's done really well. I mean, quick learner, just picks stuff up right off the bat. He's right now battling to play a lot. And that means he's going with ones quite a bit. He deserves to. He's already shown that. I'm really excited about our chance to get him here, and he's an amazing kid. I can't wait for you guys to talk to him, to hear from him. He's really something.
In a way, why are doing practice so important for you guys compared to the game, which is also important?
Well, what I would tell you is I don't know that they're that pivotal for games. I haven't done it for 14 years. And so last time I did it was when the Jets went against Joe Gibbs at some little college out there on the East Coast. I didn't know what it was. And so it's been a long time. I feel the way we practice is beneficial for us. But I did this because it's Kyle and it's the Niners. And at one time we were thinking about going to Napa. It just sounded like a good idea. Whether we do it again, I don't know. I'll let you know later.
As someone who grew up in the Bay Area, what is this rivalry between the Raiders and Niners mean to you?
Well, it's... Did you grow up in the Bay? You said that like you grew up in the Bay Area also. No, that's not what you meant though, right?
Okay.
Yeah. It's always been something. It has always, since I was, well, I don't know, 14 or whatever the heck when they got going with the Raiders, my family was Niner fans. Whole family grew up in San Francisco and all that. And so it's always just been a natural rivalry. I've never had it like the Raiders were the bad guys or the Niners were the bad guys. I liked both teams growing up. So to have a chance to do this, it's kind of fun. And to play them in this preseason, kind of fun. I like it.
So yesterday we heard the story you told them about Bill Russell, how to be a good teammate with each other. Are you starting to see that grow among the team, especially as you have a day like this?
Without question. Yeah, without question, our awareness of our roles, each person has a role to be a great teammate, and they get to do that on a regular daily basis. Bill said that he wakes up every morning with the thought of what can he do to help somebody on his team be better, you know, and talking about Havlicek or Kazzy or all the guys that he played with, Sam Jones, he was talking about how what could he do to help him play better. And when Bill said that to me, I said, you got to be kidding, man, come on, my whole team's there, you know. I mean, you can't, not every day. He said, every freaking day. And so I challenge my guys from that moment on, if he can do it every day, maybe you can do it a couple times a week, and we'll work our way up to be like Bill.
What was your last practice with fans in the stands? Did you accomplish the goal, because we see the connection with both fans and the community?
Yeah, I think it's really important. I wish we had more. I wish we could entertain them more and be out there even more. That connection is just part of this whole experience. They help us play better. We help them cheer more. So there's a synergy there that I've always entrusted in and want to respect and give it back to them. It was great that they're here today.
Good. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, that was Pete Carroll confirming that he's seen the Grateful Dead 20 times and he saw them at the Fillmore. Wow. That was my big takeaway there. I love the Grateful Dead. I've seen the Grateful Dead over 20 times, not at the Fillmore, but I saw them at Saratoga, one of the greatest nights of my life. How about that? That was really cool. Pete Carroll, he didn't see anything that he could confirm because he's coaching three fields. So everyone's asking him, what'd you see about this? What'd you see about the push? What'd you see about... He didn't see it. He's like going from side to side. He'd like more of a push up front. I think we're all aware of that. So we'll see what happens there. Pete Carroll is going to look at the tape and his coaches are going to come to him and tell him who won every drill, every battle. So the Raiders have coaches and other members of the staff who carry around sticks with cameras on them, and everything's filmed. And then as soon as practice ends, if not before, all of the film is cut up for all the positions and all the players and all the coaches, and then they're able to go over every piece of film on every portion of practice. So that's what the coaches are doing now. After they have lunch, they have a quick meeting, they go to their offices, they go to meetings, and they're looking at the film cut-ups. And then they're able to say, well, you didn't have leverage on this play. Your footwork wasn't right on this play. Let's work on this tomorrow. But I don't want to say it was, you know, it just seemed like it was a nice practice. I think if I've looked at three or four Niner beat writers or people that follow the team. Matt Mayoko, I talked to Tim Ryan today. I talked to a couple people. By the way, I got an update on Greg Papa, and he's in a really big fight. Former voice of the Raiders, the voice of the Niners. He is in a very big fight for his health, so we wish him well. And it was really nice to catch up with Tim Ryan, who's the color analyst on the radio. We go back a long time together, worked together 25 years ago. He's really good at what he does. But you just heard Pete Carroll. We got sound from Max Crosby and others. So what they just told me to make room here in the studio. We could have Eric Allen and Baron Davis together. We have Jason Horowitz, the voice of the Raiders, confirmed. Paul Gutierrez from Raiders.com confirmed. So we got all this lined up for you. Join us as we continue on here. We're excited. We are live from training camp brought to you by Modelo. Modelo is a proud partner of the show, the fighting spirit of Modelo. How great does a Modelo taste today when it's 109, dripping wet? I like to have it in my backyard brick. I like to have them on a Friday on ice, but it's Thursday, and they don't allow me a bucket of Modelos in the Raiders podcast studio, nor would I ever push that envelope. But I'm at the home studio. The home studio, you know, you might want to get one on a Friday, or maybe heading into the last segment. Modelo, proud partner of our show. We'll see what we got lined up next. We're going to jump in the chat and talk to everybody in the chat here. Got over 500 people who are watching live on YouTube and Twitter combined, and we're going to grow that number. So one day we have a monster show of video and radio, and we can tie it all together. Live from Raiders headquarters, JT, the joint practice between the Niners and the Raiders.
Like the footage that we were watching was like 2015 Seahawks tape. And then if you watch that compared to the game they just played versus the Raiders, the Seahawks and Raiders, it was like, oh, that's the exact same defense. And so it was kind of funny to go back and watch tape from before I was actually in the NFL. But, you know, it's always a pleasure to go against Max Crosby because he's one of the best, you know, in the world at what he does. And just getting different looks is always fun because, you know, they're playing things that, you know, I haven't got to go against because the Broncos are completely different, the Niners are completely different. So just that challenge of being able to see it, how they switch their coverages up. So definitely a positive day for us to get some work here.
That's George Kittle. Nice turnaround for Bobby to get that from Vic Tafer, who was at the podium. JT, back with you. Brought to you by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Have a Tito's. Go to Tito's.com for all their recipes. Paul Gutierrez joins us from Raiders.com, and great to see you here. Some of the takeaways from you today at the joint practice.
Well, I'll tell you, JT, thanks for having me. I never saw the Grateful Dead at the Fillmore, but I did see Malo at the Mystic in Petaluma, so I know I kind of digress, but that's what Pete Carroll was talking about earlier. My big takeaways are this, is that it's always good to get out there and hit somebody else that's not your own teammate, just for the sense of newness. You're in the doldrums of training camp. It's hot out there. So from the Raider perspective, it's good to go against another team. Now, the flip side of that is the 49ers are missing so many of their frontline guys. So what kind of quality work are you getting in as opposed to quantity work? It's all good work because it's different. Mm-hmm. And then if you're the Raider offense, you're going against Fred Warner. If you're the Raider defense, you're going against Kittle. So from that perspective, that's quality work.
I noticed it more friendly. It wasn't Jets Giants where they were pulled off each other the other day, the whole entire workout, and you've been around where that there's even been practices that have been canceled recently in different rivalries. It just seems like Kyle and Pete John Lynch and John Spytek. I think everybody wants to get their work done. Heat is an issue out here. I don't think it affected everybody today. And I think the Niners generally appreciate coming here, to coming to Vegas to get some work in. But you nailed it. I mentioned Vic Taffer. I was talking to him and Matt Maiocco. Wow, the amount of guys that are banged up who seem to be good to go. They'll be good to go week one, but they're not practicing as a unit fully going at it because of all the injuries.
And if you're from the 49er perspective, what you just said and what those guys have been reporting, why risk getting them out there in this when there's always – because these things are ripe for fights, and we've seen it. I've covered the team long enough where I remember when in 2014 near riot broke out because there were fans there as well when the Raiders were joint practicing with the Cowboys in Oxnard.
Right.
I was there in 2019, I believe, in L.A. at Cal Lutheran when the practice was stopped because the Rams and Raiders couldn't stop fighting with each other. This seemed like there was a healthy respect. Yeah, there were a little bit of things that were kind of flaring up here and there. Raheem Mostert walking up the 49er sideline and staring guys down, being escorted by JPJ and Colt Miller. That was a highlight, but there were no actual fisticuffs. They didn't have to pull guys off each other. From that perspective, it was just good, solid work.
Paul Gutierrez is our guest. Let's jump in on Trey Tucker. You've been here at every practice. The practices that I've seen, there's been a deep ball connection to him. He's holding on to the ball. He's really finding the ball well on these Geno bombs, indoors and outdoors. I'm very impressed because I don't think the Raiders could ever have a dominant passing team if they don't have a deep threat, and a deep threat they can go to all the time. What growth have you seen with him?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's in the Raiders' DNA, right? I mean, it's Cliff Branch, it's Fred Biletnikoff, it's James Jed, it's somebody that can fly down the field. So what you're seeing here is, at the same point, you don't want to be pigeonholed. You don't want to be somebody that's kind of cornered that, hey, this is the only thing you can do. And what we're seeing here from him is some growth. Last offseason, he had the LASIK eye surgery, and he said that actually helped him on the deep balls, tracking the ball deep. He doesn't want to just be that guy, though. Right. He wants to be able to do that. He also wants to run some outs, make guys fear him that way. That way, he could do the up-and-unders. He could do the sluggos running up the middle of the field. And that makes him a more complete receiver, and that's something that's always been his goal. So that's the type of growth that you've seen. And, the day after that scrimmage, the exhibition in Seattle, it almost seemed like it was a point of emphasis to get him involved early and often in practice. And you saw that again a little bit today. There was one pass that he did drop out in the flat. But, you know, that's what practice is for.
One concern I have, and I was talking to Rich Gannon about it, is explosive offensive line play in the running game. Mm-hmm. I just don't know when we're going to see it, because we're not supposed to see it.
Right.
And when you're looking at practice and you're writing about it, where are we on that? Because this would be the game, the only home game at home. It's your building. It's your snap count, where I would hope to see some explosive pushing and getting their hands on the Niners and trying to set something up for Ashton Jeanty, who had a nice run today on 11-on-11s. What are you seeing with the offensive line that the fans should know about?
Well, I think that the big question, obviously, and I don't think, I know it, is what's going on there at the center and right guard position with Jordan Meredith at center and Jackson Powers-Johnson. It seems like now that's going to be the combination. And the fact that those two played well into the third quarter in Seattle, and now we're seeing it continue to happen that way, okay, let's just chalk it up to that's what the offensive line is going to be. Talking with Lincoln Kennedy, same thing. As he mentioned, and we were talking on the podcast last week on the podcast, and his description was, well, it's a brand new thing here. They're building this culture from scratch. Mm-hmm. So that's what you're kind of to be expected to see, is some hiccups. But you're right. At this point, this is where you want to see that explosion. And whether they're playing against frontline starters or not, you still need to get your game going. And this is the time for them to do it. So Pete Carroll has talked about it. Guys on the offensive line have talked about it. It's time to stop talking about it and actually start showing it.
Well, Gutierrez is our guest. Where does Michael Mayer jump in on that? Because I've talked to you about this on and off the air. I want Michael Mayer to be a great player in this league. And if you don't throw him the football, he's not going to be a great player. He didn't come to this league to be a blocking tight end. And everybody says, well, he's got all the skills. I want to see it. I know the skills because you and I are at practice. We see when he runs those 12, 15-yard routes and catches it and goes right up there. And you're like, man, he looks like a freight train when he catches it. But if they don't go to him in the game because they have to leave him in to block, that's what worries me a little bit. I'm sure Chip Kelly's going to figure it out, but I want to see more Michael Mayer, and I have a feeling they're going to need him to block at times.
They are, and that's part of the 12 personnel, right?
Yeah.
That's something that Lincoln Kennedy kind of hit me to the fact that if you're running 12 personnel, you have to have a solid offensive line because you're throwing another blocker there in the offensive line, and that's Michael Mayer's position, so to speak, as being the blocking tight end. But if you've got the deep threat that we talked about with Trey, with Thornton, and you've got Jacoby running those cuts in the middle, and you've still got Brock Bowers, and those guys are all covered, well, who's uncovered at that point? That's where Michael Mayer's opportunities to catch passes is going to come in. He's got to develop that relationship and that chemistry, though, with Geno Smith and that trust, and that's what training camp is for. So, yeah, Michael Mayer, again, I'm one of the few guys – a lot of people actually in that media room last year when I was in a different position threw their hands. I was like, why are you drafting a tight end? You've already got Michael Mayer. Well, Brock Bowers seems like he could be kind of a transitional guy, a generational talent. Michael Mayer is right there as well. And I've heard some interviews where guys are saying, I think Geno actually said it the other day, was that, yeah, Brock Bowers is one of the top two, if not the best tight ends in the NFL. Michael Mayer is right behind him.
Last one, personnel-wise, the great Mike Taylor, who's been here well over 35 years, he just watches practice differently. Because he used to stand next to Al Davis and watch practice. And I wanted to ask him a little bit about what's going on with the nickel corners, what we're going to see with the slot corner. What is your vision now with Jamal Adams coming into the box and playing, you know, linebacker? Someone's going to have to come off the field. Or when they want to go with two linebackers and Jamal Adams isn't out there, but Isaiah Polamalu is going to come down in the box. And Holmes, what are you seeing here in practice with your eyes that lead you to believe that the Raiders are going to have a different look under Patrick Graham that could work?
A lot of dime coverage.
Okay.
Seen that early in practice.
Good.
And when they're having all those dime, all the nickels. And that's the thing. You could do the same thing with Chin. Chin can go up and play in the box as well. So are they safeties? Are they DBs? Are they linebackers? I mean, it's interesting. When you talk to Jamal Adams, he said, when Pete Carroll offered him an opportunity to come here, he told him, look, you're playing linebacker. Don't talk about it. If you want to come, that's what you're playing. So they have these visions of what they want these guys to do. And versatility is key. Beyond what a defensive back is supposed to look like in Pete Carroll's scheme. So a lot of nickel, a lot of dime, more dime than I recall seeing in the past few years anyways here. So they have to have these guys that fit this prototype as a defensive back for Pete Carroll's system anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to have that skill set besides looking the part, and that's where the Jamal Adams comes in. That's where Chin comes in. That's where even Isaiah Polamalu comes in as well. They're all these big, long, tall, rangy guys. That, if you close your eyes and you squint your eyes just a little bit, you look and you go, wait a minute, that kind of looks like Legion of Boom a little bit. I'm not saying they're the same guys, but there's some strains of that DNA in what Pete Carroll wants to do.
Last one, you know these alumni really well. Yeah. You've been around this organization a long time. It's alumni weekend. You know how much Mark Davis puts into this budget-wise. I mean, for everybody, we're all friends here. There is not an owner, I think, in sports because football players just have a larger alumni base than NBA teams and all that. The gravity of what he does for these alumni, bringing them in with a guest, putting them in a resort hotel, bringing entertainment to them. And then what do you look for when you see these guys when they get together, these alumni, these brothers, and they talk amongst themselves? I think it's really cool.
Those are always the best stories. And in doing the book with Lincoln Kennedy a couple years ago, it's the same thing. And having that instant connection with guys. I did a book 10 years prior to that, 100 Things Raider Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. And you talk to those guys, and it's not just the team they played for. It's a family. And it's very, very few teams can claim that. And with the Raiders, it's absolutely true. And it sounds trite, and it's just kind of a slogan or a saying, once a Raider, always a Raider, but it really means something in this building. And when they come here, whether they played in L.A., whether they played in Oakland, whether they've played here a couple of years ago, they feel like they're coming home to some sort of base. And that's all from Mark Davis. And as he said, ever since he's taken over, that is the lifeblood of this organization. Yeah. That is the most powerful thing, is the alumni. And when they feel included, when they are proud of the product on the field, everything else is gravy.
See you tonight. Thanks for doing this.
Sounds good.
There he is, everybody. Paul Gutierrez. When we come back, we'll jump in. More on practice. We're going to have Baron Davis, Eric Allen join us in studio. We got a big dinner tonight with our media team. And then we'll prepare for the game on Saturday. It's an early game. Raider Dad will be out in the parking lot. If you still have tickets for the game and you're not using your tickets, please get in touch with Raider Dad. Give the tickets to kids. I don't want to see an empty seat at Allegiant Stadium. The children, the kids, should be in all those seats.
I mean, anytime it's changed, I feel like it's a little uncomfortable, but I mean, I've been trying to embrace it with open arms. Different terminology, different strategy, but it's been cool to just learn more football, so I've been enjoying it.
JT, back with you as we continue on. We look at this team and what Jacoby Myers could do. We mentioned Michael Mayer, and now I mention Amber Theo Harris, my teammate here, who anchored the live stream today. You got to love doing that. I mean, I'm so happy to see you, and we've known each other for so long. It's another season together. But now we call him Hall of Famer, Eric Allen, and that's the first.
Wonderful.
So you've been working with him for years, but now to be able to say that every time you come in and out of a break, how great.
And I'm becoming annoying with it because I'm like, Hall of Famer, gold. Can we see your gold jacket? Right. Like, everything is about the Hall of Fame because you and I were both there just to see – that was actually my first time at the Hall of Fame, surprisingly. This is my 27th training camp, and wow. I have never been assigned to Canton. And to go with your friend going in, what a magical thing. And I'm just so proud of him, and it's so great to sit next to EA again. And we had some great guests today.
And I think before we get to the show you did today, the fact that you had access, I had access to Eric's family – when that party was really rocking and you saw all of his sons at the bar and the cousins and they're like navigating, and then Eric's got his gold jacket on, and all the, I'm sure you really appreciated how the gold jackets come and then they leave and another wave comes. Wasn't that cool?
It was neat to see kind of the tradition of the Hall of Famers going to each party and getting to see each of them. But I had the honor of bringing my father.
It was great to meet him.
Yeah, and he just, you know, went through chemo and for cancer, very serious. And so for him to have that bucket list and then the way that Eric's family and friends treated him, he just is still in heaven. And I'm just so proud to be friends with Eric Allen and his wife, Lynn, and the four boys that they have raised. You know, we say this a lot. You know, they're even better human. There aren't better humans than Eric Allen, and we're very lucky to be teammates with him here in Raider Nation.
What was it like for you and your dad in some of the private moments around the Hall of Fame?
Are you gonna make me cry?
No, but it's important.
You really
it's
are gonna. Make
I mean, my dad's 87, and every time I see him, it's a blessing. And
it is.
You to be with your dad in Canton at the birth of football in that history.
Yeah,
I can tell you're emotional about it.
Yeah, you know. You know, this time, like around November of last year, to find out, like, you don't even know if your dad is going to survive. And the man that, like, made you love football, you know, I'm his daughter. I wouldn't have loved football. I wouldn't have had the career that I've had if it wasn't for my dad. And he's diehard, what was the Redskins? That was his childhood team. And so to be able to take him into the Hall of Fame, I mean, cool story. I didn't buy him a ticket because I didn't think, like, you know, we're used to being in the media. You just walk in. I forgot, like, he doesn't have a pass. And they stopped us at the Hall of Fame and said, no, you can't go in without a ticket. And we were just going to go in for, like, 5 minutes. Yeah. And I hear, Amber, you good? And I look over, and it's Marshall Faulk. And Marshall Faulk goes, let him in.
Oh, my God.
And we just walk in. And my dad's like, oh, my gosh, Marshall Faulk. You know, and you know who he beelined for? To see a man that is 76 years old beeline for Sonny Jurgensen's bust. Mm. And the way he was looking up at that bust, like he was a boy and it's 1963. You know, it was just really cool. It was a bucket list for him, and he was just so thrilled. He got all the Redskins, Daryl Green and Riggins, and those were my childhood heroes. You know, I grew up on the Raider Nation. I didn't grow up in Oakland or LA.
I grew up a Giant fan. It took a long time for me to say we work for other teams, and now they're our team.
I mean, the Raiders have been my family. So, yeah, thank you for letting me share that because I think people that love football, we all – became football fans, not just people that work in football, because of our mothers or fathers or grandfathers or somebody that passed it down, the love of the game. And you have those memories. You know, I can remember with my tomahawk earrings and my feather headdress and fully, you know, Washington.
Die hard
back then. Yeah, die hard. My first Chucks I got were the burgundy and gold colored Chucks. You know, like, it was neat to share that with my father, and that's what the Hall of Fame is about, is like the ghosts of the past and remembering what has made this game great. And to see an older man like that relive his childhood in a few moments was really cool.
Amber Theo Harris. So I'm going to pivot for a second because I want to get back to your show. I had one of the most important interviews I've done in a long time with Don Van Atter yesterday of ESPN on the Redskins server and the leaked Bruce Allen emails and John Gruden. It was really big that he gave me that opportunity because Brent Musburger Roethlisberger came on this show and told to me it was a hit. It was a hit on John Gruden, and that year we were 3-1, and he had to resign, and it still went back to Snyder. Now John Gruden won 5-2 in the Nevada Supreme Court. The only chance for the NFL is to go to the United States Supreme Court. I don't think they want to go to the United States Supreme Court.
No.
That's just bad energy for the NFL.
No.
John Gruden could have one of the biggest settlements of all time or insist that it goes to court. And it's going back to my mentor, Bruce Allen's emails that were taken and leaked. And yeah. I think that there's so much to unpeel. You and I should do a podcast on it someday.
We could, because I first came into one of this, like I said, this is my 27th season. I think it was 1998. I was a young intern with the Washington Redskins at the time, and that was when Snyder had just taken over. And to watch the decline of that team, you know, I mean, I'm definitely not a Commanders fan. I definitely don't root for that team. And a lot of it was the Snyder regime killed that fan base.
Yeah,
it really did. It's a lively, storied fan base. And just, you know, my family's still back there. And then a team like the Ravens came back to Baltimore and showed how it was done with Art Modell and then Steve Bisciotti. And it was such a contrast in ownership and how to run organizations the right way. It's kind of like the Raiders. I always say, you know, I've been involved heavily in the Ravens, the Raiders, and then being close to the 49ers. I think those organizations are run very well, and and it does come from ownership. And Daniel Snyder really ruined that franchise for fans. And you know, John Gruden, all I can say about him is he has always been kind to me when he didn't have to be. Mm-hmm. You know, as a young woman coming into this business, that's why I thought it was a little unfortunate with some of the things that were said, and I was disappointed in him, and I was very disappointed in him. But the actions I have seen from that man did not that type of, you know, sexism. Yeah. And he actually uplifted me very early in my career. You know, when I was doing Monday Night Football for the first time, and he beelined for me, and I didn't think he would have any idea who I was. And he just came up, shook my hand, you know, real hard, like a Gruden handshake. Right. And he goes, "You keep doing what you're doing. Keep giving those boys hell."
Wow.
Like, and that, to me, to come from John Gruden was like, wow. And I just saw him in the airport, and I didn't think he would know who I was or remember. And he's like, I'm a big fan of yours.
That's great.
You do a great job analyzing. And I was like, you know, to see me as somebody that really analyzes football.
Really respects you.
Really, yeah, there was a lot of respect, and he's always been vocal about it. So
you deserve it. That's great. Yeah. Wrapping it up, I wanted to get your biggest cause of concern and something you're most excited about that could be really good for the team.
Gosh, I'm really excited about this offense.
Yeah.
And could you imagine sitting here this time last year saying that? I am really excited about this offense. Chip Kelly, I think, is better than what we saw in the NFL. He learned from the last time than what we've seen him do in college since then is something to be excited about. It's going to be a complicated, kind of hard to predict offense. I think Ashton Jeanty is going to be great. Gosh, could you imagine having to protect Brock Bowers in the slot at times? I mean, Jacoby Myers and then Dante Thornton, Trey Tucker, I know, is playing on the outside.
It looks good.
I think this could be a high-flying, high-scoring offense at times, okay? I think the secondary is a little bit for me, and it's just because it's new. I haven't seen enough of it. We just had Cynthia Freeland on our show. She was fantastic.
Yeah,
and
she's really good.
She was talking about the difference if your secondary can just elevate a little bit from last year to this year, how much difference in this division that can matter with win totals. And it's no doubt that Pete Carroll wants to bolster the secondary, and he likes big, long kind of corners.
Yeah.
And I just needed to see it all together. So I think that's the corners.
Because we
not necessarily the
it.
Safeties. Yeah. I like Jeremy Chinks. I watched him closely with the Commanders last year. I think Isaiah Polamalu at safety, he's an up-and-coming player. Just a little bit with the corners, I want to see what we've got there, and especially at depth.
Yeah, because it feels like the Raiders in this game coming up have to show us something.
They do. You know,
that offensive line's got to get a push.
That's another concern I have a little bit.
And the secondary, as you mentioned perfectly, someone's got to jump a route, make a play,
The fans need to see something.
We need turnovers. The Raiders have not been a team that forces turnovers for a long time, and it's the reason why they haven't been winning recently. You have to take the ball away from the other guy. It's that simple. And we need corners that can do that. In this division, yes.
Yeah, my wife looks forward to seeing you tonight.
I love your wife. Me and her, we have a great time.
You are going to have a great time.
Chop it up.
I say this is Marcus's inside joke. This is his Academy Awards.
Oh, yeah. He gets to stand up.
Yeah, so yeah. I will see you at dinner.
JT, you're the best, man.
You're the best. Thank you. That's Amber Theo Harris. When we come back, we got about another minute or two. We'll reset. Hour number two, we're going to have Eric Allen. We're going to have Baron Davis. And we'll have a lot more to get to. And again, we hope everybody shows up tomorrow for the game. I'll be on the call with Eric Allen and Matt Millen. Jason Horowitz, who will be here next, he goes to the TV side, and he'll be there with Kirk Morrison and Rich Gannon. And Rich has got a lot to say. When Rich comes on, when Rich comes on, as you know, Rich, and you're a lot like that too. That's why I love having you on. You tell what you see and you turn it around really quickly. We'll get to that on the other side. We are brought to you by the M Resort Spahn Casino. Head on out to the M. It's the official hotel of the Raiders. It's where the rookies are staying. They have Anthony's. They have a fine restaurant. They have the pool outside. And most importantly, they have a great tavern and grill, the Raiders Tavern and Grill. We'll get to all back on the other side. And we're going to get into tomorrow's show. We have a great conversation with John Spytek. We'll have the Max Crosby interview, too. That's all coming up. And we'll probably reposition some of your stuff today because it went so well.
Yeah, it was great interviews. Hope you get a chance to air those.
Yep, that's Amber Theo Harris. We'll be back on the other side. Thanks for listening to hour number one. If you want to watch it live, we are really got a nice crowd here, almost 700 people who are streaming us right now. Go to YouTube, JT the Brick YT, and on Instagram, JT the Brick LV, also Larry Kruger from KMBR in San Francisco. So we're rolling today on the flagship of the Silver and Black. Take us out, Bobby. This is Raider Nation Radio.